Hello and welcome to Connected, the Sunday Business Post technology podcast brought to you in association with Dell EMC. I'm Emmett Ryan, and well, we're going a little different today, as we usually do, in fairness. We seem to always say we're going a little different. Today's guest has been nominated for one of the greatest prizes one can be nominated for in the internet. He's been nominated for a Webby. He's also a winner of a Telly Award. We'll explain what those are in a bit. And it's all for a campaign around drink driving. And you might go, well, like, there's been loads of drink driving campaigns before. What makes this one different? Well, we're going to find out, because it's in a different way to what you've been used to. Joining me now from BBDO in Dublin, he is a digital producer with them, Barry O'Sullivan. Barry, welcome to Connected.
Thank you very much for having me.
Barry, so like we said there at the top, this is a bit of a different sort of thing, because this wasn't a regular TV ad or a regular web ad. What did you guys do?
Well, I suppose with advertising, we're always looking to go where people are consuming content and where they're watching things as well. So a lot of the time you hear people talk about advertising, saying that, you know, because TV is no longer watched all the time, that therefore it isn't effective. But the fact is, we just have more mediums now, really, to try and get our message out there. And with this in mind, RSA had come to us about doing a campaign around drink driving. And the automatic reaction at first was kind of like a TV ad. But then we decided, we looked at the research and the facts, and we realised that the figures were that there was a lot of 18 to kind of 30-year-olds who hadn't really been advertised to before about drink driving, and there was a whole question mark over if TV advertising would be effective, because they're so scattered at the moment in terms of their viewing habits and stuff. It's very hard to pinpoint them, and as well whether or not even TV advertising for them would be effective. So we decided to look at a new kind of medium that we felt that they would be interested to engage in and willing to participate. But then we'd also be able to put a very serious message in as well, and one that we knew would be effective. And so that's where we kind of came to the idea of virtual reality and the question of what would it be like if we'd actually put you in the shoes of a person who has decided to drink and drive.
Now, this is very much a tell, not show, so as we know, because it's audio. So I deliberately asked Barry to not let me try it out beforehand, because I wanted to have the same inexperience you, the listener, does, aside from those of you who tried. So, Barry, you've got an Oculus headset with you there. When someone puts that on, what goes on? What do they do? What's the experience?
Well, when they first put the headset on, they're given two options, and they can see two kind of icons in front of them. One says stay in and the other says stay out. And when they look at one of those, they get to select it. And that essentially then is the only kind of choice they're given in the experience. So as they look at head out, for example, they'll see a loading icon all of a sudden appearing. And when that finishes loading, then the experience starts, and they'll see a title called Consequences coming towards them. It's very kind of like Stranger Things, where you see the title at the start there, and we can get a view of what they're about to experience through the letters. And as they come through one of the letters, their next thing, they're in a bar, and they're fully immersed in the bar, and they look everywhere, and it's like they're really sitting there. They even have their own body as well. When they look down, there's an avatar there. And they get a chance to kind of take in the atmosphere. It's very relaxed. We did on purpose. We made sure that the first scene was quite, you know, just kind of nice ambient, give them a chance to experience virtual reality, because for a lot of people, they haven't had this taste before. And so when they're nice and relaxed and they really are enjoying the music and the company they're keeping as they look around, we quickly whisk them off to another setting.
And where are they brought to? I'm guessing it's a car.
It is a car. There's lots of kind of effects and lighting, and we use kind of burnout lighting that comes through the bar all of a sudden, so it's kind of like almost like a dream sequence. And next thing, before they know it, they're in a car looking around. The friend they were sitting beside has kind of blood in his head and is conked out, and they can hear kind of police, ambulance, and chatter. They hear footsteps. So what we did was we used 3D audio to really kind of immerse you in the experience. So as you turn your head around, the sound changes as well.
Ah, clever.
So
yeah,
if you're looking at your friend in the car on the left, you'll hear footsteps then on your right, which will indicate to you should maybe have a look. So you'll turn your head around and you see a fireman approach the window. And at that point, then you realize you're upside down in the car. So it's quite, we were kind of, you know, really using the medium to kind of mess with your perspective and, you know, your whole sensibility in the scene. And that's when you realize that you're in a lot of trouble.
Now, I got to think about sort of the creative process into this, because one thing to go, we can do something with VR. Working out what that looks like is the challenge, really. So when you were all thinking there, BBBDO, how do we do this? What was sort of the discussion? Like, how did you come to sort of this as being what you did? Obviously without trade secrets, you're not going to get getting in trouble.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because we had done another VR experience before for RSA. We had done a few for other clients, but for RSA in particular, which was a driving one that was all CGI. So it was like a computer game. And that proved to be really effective, and it's still running now at the moment on the RSA Shuttle, which tours around Ireland. And you can go and experience it there, and this latest one, Consequences. But so when we came to doing Consequences, there was a big discussion over CGI or real life film.
Of course, yeah, because it's a very different experience mentally, like.
Yeah, definitely, and we just kind of looked at the objectives, and the objectives of the first one was to really make you feel like you had control over the experience. Well, so you were driving, you were either falling asleep at the wheel or you were texting, and we wanted you to feel like you had control over this scenario. But ultimately, because you're texting so much in the car, you can imagine what happens. But in this one, after doing research, one of the big things that came back from talking to people who had unfortunately had made the decision to drink and drive was how incredibly quick their life spun out of control, and how quick they found themselves either in a wheelchair or in a jail cell after what seemed like just a very innocent drink and then getting behind the car, and also that they hardly even remembered the car crash itself. So we just really felt that insight then lent itself to film, because in virtuality film you don't have as much control as you would when you're in CGI. You're more kind of experiencing what's happening around you, but you're fully immersed in the experience. And we just felt that was perfect then for what we wanted to achieve, which was we give you purposely one choice at the start of the experience, and after that, it is completely out of your control. Your whole life just spirals. You go from scene to scene very quickly, and before you have time to even take a breath and realise where you are, you're on to the next scene, and before you know it, you're either in a wheelchair, unfortunately, or in a jail cell.
Wow, so it's obviously the nature of the topic means it does get dark, does get bleak, because that was what you're trying to get across. When you were sort of rolling it out, because you know yourself, like, you can do all the background research, all the development, all that, you're still putting it out there with a bit of, we don't know what's going to happen into the ether. Like, you've got hope, you've got some sort of, you know, range and all that, but there's still a loss of control on your side as well. What were you sort of thinking when you were putting it out there?
I guess that the first thing what you want is that people come back impressed with it, and that they, you know, you don't want them turning around going, well, that was rubbish. So as soon as people were experiencing it and saying, wow, that's really powerful, that was when we knew we were onto a winner, because you know, it wasn't only that they were saying that was cool. Which is what you get a lot of VR experiences, responses. They were coming off saying that was powerful, that was chilling, that was haunting. And their daily kind of phrases that the RSA staff hear now when people take off the headsets. So as soon as we started having that kind of feedback, it was incredible, because, you know, you can create these kind of experiences and you have to put a lot into them to make them. But it isn't until they're finished and the person tries it that you really get to know if it's successful or not. And so hearing those quotes from people really just was a breath of fresh air for us.
I know, obviously you want a client to be happy as well. How did RSA respond to it? What was their, because when you even went to them, actually before, never mind the response after it came out, when you said to them, we're going to go VR with this, and you'd done VR with them before, but you were going with a different approach here, what was their reaction like at first?
I suppose the first reaction was another VR experience, and so then you're in a position where you have to explain to them the benefits of why it makes sense to continue using VR. And, you know, so the first thing they do is they look at the current VR experience and how that has been affected on the shuttle, and the results for that thankfully were quite good. So their automatic reaction then, I suppose, is, well, let's do the same thing again. Let's do another driving game, but have you drunk in it? And so we put a filter on, and then as you're driving, you have very little control of the car because you're drunk. And so, you know, I mean, that in itself as an idea is good, but, you know, we had to really look then at the objectives of the overall campaign and what we wanted to achieve. And the results we were getting back from research were that everyone is affected differently by alcohol. So while one person may drive and go, wow, geez, yeah, that's exactly what I'd be like if I was trying to drive drunk, another person would say, well, that's ridiculous. I'd never be that drunk on only 3 pints, so I'd be fine. So it was too subjective, and we just felt that then people wouldn't take it seriously, and they just say, well, that's never going to happen to me because I'd never be that drunk driving. I'm fine. So we talked to RSA about these kind of findings and research, and just, you know, they were very understanding, as they always are, when we talked about using real film and real people, because we really wanted to, empathy in this experience to come true. And that means real actors looking directly at you, making eye contact. And when you're using CGI, while you can have models in there, they're never... there's always a feeling that they're not real as they look at you.
Of course, yeah.
So you're using film and real people, we could really demonstrate the powerfulness. So how we did that then was we watched, as a producer, about, I think, 100 different VR experiences, and gave myself a killer headache just so I could narrow it down to 5 ultimate kind of movie or film 360 experiences that the 2 creatives, Clayton Homer and Dylan Elliott, could try, and then also our client, Christine Haggerty. And they were kind of more based around people sitting right beside you. Like, one was called The Invisible Man, which I urge any of your listeners to check out on YouTube 360. And it's essentially a poker game that goes wrong, and at the end, you're faced with a gun in your face. And it's quite... you know, one of the learnings we had was that it was probably too long in the one scene, but the ending was very powerful, because as that gun's pointed at your face and you're sitting there in VR at a poker table, you really feel like, you know, it's about to go off. So
yeah,
when our clients saw that, they really understood then the power that could be achieved through using film in virtual reality.
And now, obviously, you saw these great results and all that. RSA, what did they feel they learned from the campaign, I suppose, working with you from this?
I guess what we learned ourselves was the amount of different mediums out there now that we can use to help communicate our messages to. And, you know, one of the main things we kind of learned, and it's taken from allgoodtales.com, there's a Venn diagram. And in that Venn diagram, on the left, you have what people want to hear, and on the right, you have what we want to communicate. So, you know, we kind of adapted that, whereby the magic slice in the middle, where those two circles come together, is technology. And so we just slightly adapted it, but they came up with it, in fairness, allgoodtales.com. But it said, what do we want people to interact with, and what will people be willing to interact with? And so when those two things came together, we realized that, you know, you can try and show a TV ad or a video, especially when RSA are visiting schools and colleges, and a lot of the time people might not pay as much attention as you'd like. But with virtual reality, and you put a headset in front of them, they're a lot more likely to want to experience it and want to try the headset on. They might not want to hear a road safety message or think that they've heard them all before, but they will put on the headset to experience the ad. And then after that, we know that the experience itself is so powerful that they'll definitely come out wanting to talk about it, wanting to talk to their teacher about it. So, you know, with that in mind, I think we just realized that we didn't have to be persuading, advertising a lot of times about persuading people to listen to your message, but with virtual reality and other similar technology, you can be very creative while changing behaviours, and people are willing to come and experience it. You're not having to force them, or, you know, bend their arm behind their back and try and get them to put on the headset. They're quite receptive to it.
And obviously, getting onto the funner side of this, because obviously you are dealing with some dark subject matter given the nature of the campaign, but, you know, that's important. You got nominated for a Webby for it, so how did that come about? Like, Oh. I'm very surprised because like web, for the odd listener, because the Cult of Connected are pretty nerdy, but the Webbies are, like, use a horrible term, the Oscars of the internet, but only, frankly, getting nominated for a Webby is a lot harder than getting nominated for an Oscar, which is a lot because it's not easy to get nominated for an Oscar. So how did that all come to being? Because you don't normally see many Irish firms at all make a Webby shortlist.
Yeah, that's true. There was one other Irish firm, I think, nominated this year. It was Boys and Girls. Lawrence O'Byrne, who's one of my friends, I rang him. Or I contacted him on LinkedIn straight away to just congratulate him, say how lucky I was we weren't competing in the same category. But yeah, I mean the Webbies, it's something that I've been in the industry for 10 years now, and I was kind of waiting for the right campaign that I knew when entered would have a chance. And you know, at BBDO we've done a lot of great work, a lot of great work on the shuttle as well, and a lot of interactive games and experiences. But this one, when we did it, based on the reaction we were getting from people, we just knew we had something special on our hands. And so, you know, I went onto the Webbies. I looked at the latest categories. I made sure there were suitable ones that we could enter. I looked at all the different research and, you know, the kits and stuff to make sure we had the proper entry in place. I made sure that we made an amazing trailer. To do with the campaign, so Clayton and Dylan in the office with the help of Noel Byrne and Bob helped us put together the trailer, because a lot of the time with VR, the challenge is how do you get judges, all the judges, to experience it, but firstly to take notice, because there's a lot of VR experiences out there. So we needed a powerful trailer, we needed a powerful kind of hero image, which you can see there. It's like a it's like a Google Cardboard, but it's made out of metal and it's all crushed, and
it's been battered is one way of putting it, like, yeah.
So it's an easily kind of recognizable image for the campaign, which was very important. And so when we had that developed and we had the trailer, which helped to kind of, the point of the trailer was to try and recreate the kind of tension that you experience by having the headset on without having to put the headset on, because that's very hard to recreate. But we decided we'd try our best so that the judges at least would want to try the headset on by watching the trailer going, we have to see what this is like. So once we had those two pieces, we then went ahead and entered the Webbies, and really after that then it was just crossing the fingers and hoping, you know, against hope that we'd be shortlisted. So I remember the day we were, the shortlist was announced, and I went straight into my creative director, Dylan Cotter, who had worked on the campaign too. And we were entered into two categories, so I got him to look at the first category and we weren't there. And he just turned to me and said, I hope for your sake, Barry, we are in the next category. And so, but Dylan, being as cool as always, looked at the second category, turned around and said, look, don't worry, if we don't make it, it's okay. And then we opened up the category and we were there. We could see the metal cardboard alongside National Geographic Free Solo, which scared the BJs out of me, but also made me realise how powerful the campaign actually is, the fact it's been nominated alongside, you know, a category like that.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. And the other ones, now, in fairness, I am aware of these, but this is one probably our listeners might be as aware of. You won a Telly Award in New York the other night, only a few nights ago, isn't that right?
Yeah, just 2 nights ago.
Wow, so tell us, were you over in New York, or did you...
No, we didn't go to New York. That's the beauty, really, of online advertising now. You can easily enter these awards as a small agency in Ireland and compete with the big dogs, you know. And so at the Telly Awards, we were...
What category did you win?
So there was three categories. We won a bronze for best use of 360, a silver for best use of VR, and then a silver for best public interest awareness.
Wow.
Which is really brilliant to have won that one, for especially for RSA. But again, in the category, there was like Oculus's Blade Runner 2049 VR experience,
right,
and Pixar's Coco VR. And so I thought when I saw that, now there's no chance we're going to beat them. And we did. We got a silver and they got a bronze.
Great. And now, for people who don't know, the Telly Awards, what are they?
So the Telly Awards were established, they're quite prestigious, they were established in 1978, they were used to award all the kind of madmen TV advertising, And so they've been going for a long time, and why I entered them was I was very impressed with how they really had adapted to the current times with all the different screens and all the mobiles and tablets, and they have Netflix and everyone's watching something somewhere else, and so they had really just kind of adapted to that whole scene, and they had a special virtual reality categories, and so I just felt after talking to my creative director, Dylan Cotter, that we would have a real chance because, you know, you have to believe in what you've worked in and that it can make a difference and, you know, and it has, and that hopefully judges in America would see that because there's so many to pick, you can imagine, over in America what you're competing with, and thankfully they did.
That's fantastic. Now, obviously this, what we're talking about here a lot is that multitude of screens at different ways, because even think sort of, you know, like outside here, because I don't bring the phones in with me, you know, I got like multiple sized smartphone screens. You know, we got the Oculus here. There's your desktop. There's your laptop. There's your tablet. There's your television. There are so many different ways people look at screens now. Like, how is sort of, you know, when you're looking at sort of evolving what you've learned from here to bring it into other campaigns, what sort of, you know, can you take from this and go, well, here's what we need to be thinking about when we're working on our next campaign, be it RSA, be it Badger and Dodo Coffee, who we happen to be holding here, like whoever.
I suppose the kind of main thing is, you know, with technology now, you, as I said, you don't have to force ads into people's faces. You know, there's YouTube and there's pre-rolls, which are fine and they do work, but there's an opportunity with technology to really create an experience for someone that people are willing to get behind. And, you know, it's almost a great sales tool, yeah. I've learned. You know, so if we take a virtual reality experience and bring it in store, for instance, it can act as a sales tool whereby, as there's people on the shop floor for a shop assistant, for instance, in DID, one of our clients, they can invite them in to try a virtual reality experience, which they're quite willing, you know, to stop and try, and then ask about, well, why do you have this headset here? What's it made of? And then, oh, well, we have a special promotion now on all our TV screens, and they're all, you know, special. They're on sale, and so then next thing you've got a natural conversation started. You don't have to force it. You don't have to drag people in saying, do you want to sign this form? Do you want to sign up today? And at that then as well, I suppose, as the sales assistant is talking to, say, the parents, the kids then have something to play with. So they're not badgering their parents to leave. So especially, for instance, in a phone shop, you can imagine the kids get to, you know, whether it's play for your experience or an augmented reality one where they're chasing a rabbit around the store, or maybe it's using their mobile phone to control a plane that's on the TV screen. And so while they're doing that, the parents can have a proper conversation about the specs behind the phone and stuff. So it's really, it's not only a message delivering medium, it's a sales tool in itself to help you start a conversation that feels natural, which is what we're always trying to do.
And I suppose you're looking at sort of this campaign you've done for the RSA. It was a technology you knew a bit about, but you had to sort of bring stuff you hadn't thought about before into it. When you're looking at sort of the next stuff you're working on, like, you know, because you mentioned you got your creative director, you got you on your side and all that. When you get a sort of a challenge like this coming forward, like, you know, how do you guys get that conversation going? Because it's not just that you have different, you know, desires and motivations, it's that your knowledge bases are wildly different as well. Like, what you would, obviously you'd have an understanding of what the other person does, but they know a lot of the stuff that, well, that doesn't work because X, Y, Z, which takes a bit of a while to do. So when you're having that chat with Dylan or whoever, how do you kind of make sure that sort of, you know, we've got we're seeing the same thing because you are coming from different perspectives?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I suppose, you know, we all have different skill sets. I'm the producer, so I build everything, and my main concern is that we can build things on time and within budget, you know, and that they're feasible and they can be done. The creatives then, you know, Dylan and Clayton, for instance, on the RSA campaign, they are concerned with the idea and making sure that it matches what the planners have come up with in terms of the strategy. And then Dylan Cotter there is our amazing creative director who comes in really to help inspire us and make sure that we're being as original as we can be, and that if he sees anything in the ideas that he thinks maybe have legs, that he tries to help us, you know, reach the potential of that idea. And then when the technology comes into play, really is when the idea has been kind of formed. As a producer, you give me a blank piece of paper and ask me to come up with an idea or a headline, I'll bang my head against the table. But if you can bring me an idea that's kind of 50% there, I can. I'm pretty good at coming up with different ways that we could bring that idea to life online, through whether that's, you know, mobile or desktop, or, you know, virtual reality or augmented reality, or maybe it's voice activation. You know, there's my role, along with Enda Conway, our head of innovation, is to keep on looking out there at the different technology mediums there, and then, you know, tries to sell them to clients, and then I'll try and make them work to actually, you know, ensure that what we're selling is possible as the producer. But so in terms of, you know, how we decide what technology suits best, it really comes down to two things. One is it achieving the objective, and we make sure that the idea, the technology, isn't taking over the idea, that it isn't the tech that's going to be the cool thing. We want the brand and the idea to be the main thing. And then the next point is, will it actually work? You know, will the end, you know, finished product, are we confident we can build this in a way that the user is going to feel, you know, breathtaking by? And with VR and things like that as well, because they're new, you know, you have to do a lot of tests around. You don't want people feeling sick, puking. But as creatives then as well, in this experience for, say, consequences, you know, we use that to our advantage, and in the ambulance scene actually made you feel a bit woozy as you were getting an injection. So you can kind of, you know, take advantage sometimes of those technology defaults. Overall, we just want to make sure that the idea is the focus, that it makes sure that it doesn't take over from the brand, and that being the technology, and that the end experience then for the user is actually going to do the idea justice.
And the last thing I want to ask about in depth is, because we were talking beforehand, you've been with BBDO 8 years, roughly now, nearly nine. Yes. When you had joined that company, in terms of the amount of screens you or I or anyone of any age would typically look at in a day, a telly, a laptop, maybe a smartphone, basically, you know. Now, because like VR was not even in its infancy then, people were talking about Oculus, but like, you know, they were like, well, let's see what happens. You know, now there's just so many different ways of interaction. Like even how we use television in particular, not just that linear TV has gone down, but that, you know, I know if I'm watching a certain show, I'm going to see lots of ads for insurance. I know if I'm watching another show, I'm going to see that bloody unpussed ad over and over again. You know, Angela Scanlon's great, but I really am sick of seeing that ad. And I know she's a national treasure, like brilliant. It's great for promoting sciences as well, but I'm just sick of the ad. Yeah. But now it's like there's so many different touch points. And also, obviously, there's like hyper exposure. Like, as in, like, I see so many ads in a day. Having one stand out, even in a bad way, like the unpussed one, you know, is a challenge. Like, when you're trying to make sure, sort of, you know, you're getting a message across, is that experience more important than ever? Because I'm thinking now of, like, what you guys have done with this RSA campaign is, I'm not thinking about it as an ad about drink driving, because we've all seen a million of those. I'm thinking about it as an experience, essentially, much more than just another ad, like.
Yeah, I definitely, well, one thing is that I'm delighted in the age we're at now, because it was a lot harder back in the day to make different ads in websites and stuff as well, or microsites for brands, because, you know, there wasn't a one size fits all. And you know, and nowadays you have responsive advertising or responsive websites, which are brilliant. So when you build your site, you make sure that it can resize for whatever screen it's shown on, so there's a lot less headache there, whereas there would have been a lot more in the past. Also, there's the beauty of now is there's always a way to inject yourself in a consumer conversation in a way that feels natural. And, you know, you can be sure to, if you do just a bit of research and look at the different technology out there, and especially all the different startups and stuff, they have so many amazing ideas. Like if you go onto GitHub and CodePen and stuff, you'll see people just sharing their code and stuff for you to kind of play with. Bob Greenberg, who works at OrGeo over in America, you know, one of their main kind of ethos is that they bring in startups every year and get them to propose what their new technology is. And then the benefit to them is they'll get a chance to work with a big brand like Nike. So using that kind of mentality and working with startups who have ideas, who have technology that, you know, is going to surprise, is always you know, something that's very exciting in advertising now. So a recent example we did, for instance, was for Rockshore, who we helped launch. And coming up to Christmas, we really wanted to, you know, get Rockshore into the Christmas spirit and make it a natural part of the conversation. And you know, so that was the kind of brief. And how do you do that in this day and age? And so Endor, head of innovation, looked at, you know, how people are talking at the moment and using stickers and GIFs and stuff in their natural conversations with their friends. And the idea was, well, what's stopping us from saying, if you're asking your mate to go for a pint over Christmas, that they grab the Rockshore sticker that says pints? And we were saying there has to be a way to do that. There has to be, you know. So we went off when we researched, and we looked at Giphy, which is where a lot of the GIFs seem to be coming from. And through, you know, kind of clever use of tagging and stuff, we realized that, you know, when how the user journey is acted is they take a picture and then they want to find a GIF that's related to pints. And so they'll type in pints in the Giphy search on either Snapchat or Instagram, and then they'll grab one that they like. So we managed to have that when you type in pints, a lot of the Rockshore GIFs would come up. And, you know, they weren't heavily branded or anything. They were just, they were coloured, the light blue and stuff. And they might have had like the bottle of the Rockshore in a kind of cartoony type way. But people started naturally using them, you know, and all of a sudden people were asking their friends out for drinks and stuff, and they were doing cheers and stuff using Rockshore kind of Giphies. And there was, I think, and there was telling me now at this stage, there's like been 11 million uses of those GIFs, naturally, organic, like not, we didn't advertise them or anything. We just let people find them and figured that people would use them themselves. So in this day and age, it's brilliant that you can do a campaign like that and make yourself naturally part of the conversation without having to stop people in the street and say, do you want to watch our ad or do you want to sign up? You know, we can cleverly inject ourselves in the conversation where people are either watching content or already chatting, and make it feel normal that, you know, it's of value to them. They're quite happy to interact with the brand. And that's amazing that in this day and age we can do that.
Barry O'Sullivan, thanks so much for joining us. I know the Cult of Connected want to be able to see more of your stuff, more content. So if they want to find Barry or what you do online, where should they go?
The best place is to go to bbdo.ie, and you'll see all of our latest campaigns. And if you want to reach out to me, you can also find me on LinkedIn and Twitter.
Great stuff. And thanks very much to Barry for joining us. It's been fascinating because it's definitely, like, you know, we don't normally ask somebody about the making of, you know, sort of a campaign like this. And it's really interesting to see the different types of tech used. Our show is, as ever, produced by Jack O'Kennedy, who also edits it, and does basically everything that is apart from the talking. That's what I'm left with. So thanks to Jacko for that. We are, of course, sponsored by Dell EMC, and thank you to them for their continued support. And until next time, I'll keep being Emmett Ryan.